You are tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
To this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I am Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
You certainly are. And today we're going to talk about nukes or nuclear in Ohio and probably some other wide ranging, but we're joined by Pat Maride.
But wait, what Marida? Could possibly go wrong?
Oh, yeah, there? Yeah. My second title, like what could possibly go wrong? Okay, well, what could go wrong? I forgot to give you the second title. Anyway, we're joined by Pat Maride. And Pat, I've got a little bio here, but you can correct me or truncate it if you want. I have you as a longtime anti-nuclear activist since the 1980s, a board member of the Ohio Nuclear Weapons Freeze Campaign. 25 years, you're a volunteer at the Sierra Club on environmental issues and chairing the Ohio Sierra Club Nuclear Free Committee. And for the past 2 years, you've been coordinating with the Ohio Nuclear Free Network. And with all that, you had to give up your job as a pharmacist, right? Because there was just no time. Is that pretty much it?
Yes, I've been retired for about 15 years now. So,
okay.
But I do have a background in the biological sciences. I've studied some physics. So I understand how much the living cells are damaged by radioactivity. Ionizing radiation is not compatible with living cells.
I'm wondering what brought you to this? What was there, like some singular thing, or just your knowledge as a scientist? What brought you to this issue?
Actually, for Mother's Day, my son gave me Carl Sagan's book, Cosmos, and I read it. And at the very end was a chapter about nuclear weapons and nuclear war. And I was so appalled that this could destroy everything on Earth that I had a whole being born again, anti-nuclear, if you will, and just had to get involved with trying to stop nuclear weapons and stop a nuclear arms race and the threat of nuclear war.
Well, what prompted some of this conversation here was there's been some recent activity here in Ohio, House Bill, what is it, 434, is that right?
Yes, that's an incarnation of a bill that's been going around for about 6 years now that would create a whole new Ohio authority, like an agency, that would be put under the Department of Development and contract its work out to Jobs Ohio, that would do research and development on a new nuclear reactor, of course, paid for by Ohio taxpayers.
Mm-hmm. How did they decide Jobs Ohio? That seems a weird oversight committee.
Well, Jobs Ohio is a public-private institution. And so they are out of reach of Ohio ethics laws and certain employment conflict of interest issues. They're out of accountability, which if they were a full-fledged agency, they would have to report all those things.
So there'd be like sunshine requirements and they'd have to actually tell people what they were talking about and what they were doing?
Yes. And not only that, this bill is only 14 pages. Now you're going to create a whole new Ohio authority in just 14 pages, six of which are about keeping the board of this new authority in-house so the public could not be involved in participating in this board of directors.
The thing that I really don't understand is the, other than the financial gain behind this, the fact that nuclear is, you know, really, we like to say it's dead in the water. It's just not viable. It has too many elements and there haven't really been any new nuclear power plants come online for quite a long time.
Right. What she's alluding to is just when you do an economic analysis, let's not talk about it's good or it's bad or it's going to kill everybody on the planet Earth, you know, which I would put in the bad category myself. but it's just not economically competitive with all of the other alternatives.
Yes, my goodness. While solar and wind, especially wind, is down to maybe 3 cents per kilowatt hour, or in some cases, even half a cent. Nuclear is up there at 12 to 15%. So it's not competitive. Well, the good news is that Ohio House Bill 434 is not being heard now. So it's almost certain to be dead for this year. And they'll have to start all over again next year with a new bill, which we hope they won't do.
Well, they tend to be really persistent because there's a lot of financial gain somewhere for them. And I'm just wondering, what is the argument or what are the arguments for something like this? Because other than some people at some level making a lot of money, it's a huge cost to the taxpayer and also a huge cost to everything in the environment. I just completely can't connect with what would be the reason other than, you know, ill gain.
Well, it's really all pie in the sky, the actual arguments that they're using. They're talking about making medical isotopes, which would only be done after a reactor is built, and then they would have to reprocess the waste to get the isotopes. So that's a non-starter. And then they even talk about they have a complete solution for nuclear waste. They're going to do space travel. It is absolutely crazy what you can find if you listen to their testimony on the Ohio Channel Reporting.
What universe are they in?
So they're actually saying they're going to use nuclear waste to do space travel?
No, they're going to solve the problem of nuclear waste. Now, how they're going to do that, I don't know.
Well, you know, I think this is a good example for a junket for the state legislature. You know, let's send them up. head them on up there, and they can do a little bit of research, play a little golf, you know, and come back and tell us how it went. So,
well, actually, the company here, they don't have. This is a group called eGeneration, a small group up in Cleveland, and they don't have any money to really. They don't have $60 million, so it's hard to understand how these things have legs, except it passed the House, and there were Democrats as well as Republicans that voted for it, so it's strange that anything's...
I say follow the money, Pat, follow the money.
Well, and let's go a little bit back in Ohio history here. Because, you know, what we're saying is we want a new nuclear industry in Ohio that has no effective governmental oversight, which takes us back to the good old days when we had a nuclear industry in Ohio with no effective governmental oversight.
We still have nuclear stuff in Ohio, though.
But I'm thinking specifically of the Piketon plant. Could you give us a little bit of the history about some of the problems that, because I'm sure it all went just swimmingly and everything's fine. So tell us a little bit about what that process has been like.
Well, this is actually called the Portsmouth Nuclear Site, but it's not in Portsmouth. It's up in 20 miles north of Portsmouth in Pike County, about a 4,000 acre site. And so the government is supposedly overseeing this, but in the 1950s, they began to enrich uranium for nuclear bombs. And this process, they call it the gaseous diffusion plant. It took extreme amounts of energy. Their propaganda said that it used as much energy as the city of New York. Three massive process buildings, they actually cover 95 acres under roof. If you can imagine, you're farmers, you understand how much that is. 85 feet, 65 feet, 45 feet tall, respectively. Two coal plants were built specifically to supply electricity to the Portsmouth site.
Wow.
And they burned 7.5 million tons of coal annually. So this is hardly a carbon-free project. And the worst thing they did there was, unbelievably, they brought in high-level nuclear waste. And they ran it through all of those buildings I'm talking about. And that contaminated the entire site with neptunium and plutonium and americium and highly radioactive substances. And then it was privatized in 1998, given over to a private corporation at a bargain rate. They operated until 2001. Then the Department of Energy kept it on cold standby for 4 more years, which meant they didn't have to start cleaning up during that time. So cleanup was estimated to cost over $10 billion, which and that was the cost in yesterday's dollars. So local people in Piketon, they're very upset about the process of cleanup that's underway because it's a massive... It's a 5 million cubic yard on-site disposal facility that's under construction. It's going to have multiple individual cells, and some of those cells are now being filled. These cells are supposed to hold the less radioactive rubble from those big buildings. But while some of the more radioactive components are being sent to Nevada and Texas, they're... Some of these really radioactive things are still being buried at Portsmouth, even over strong public opposition. And Senator Sherrod Brown said the waste acceptance criteria for the site, for the disposal site, has holes big enough to drive a convoy of trucks through.
Well, I understand, you know, if I read the reports correctly, that during this cleanup, and we'll get back to some of the problems before this, but It's been handled in such a way that didn't they find a lot of radioactive dust in nearby middle schools and places like that? I mean, hasn't that been a current problem that's going on?
Oh, certainly. So, you know, they closed the middle school, the Zions Corner Middle School down there, because the Board of Education was very concerned about students having contracted leukemia and other cancers, and four students there have died. So we hired our Ohio Nuclear Free Network. We hired an expert, Joseph Mangano, and he did a report on health statistics there. And he is an epidemiologist. He's the executive director of the Radiation and Public Health Project. He gathered information from the Ohio Department of Health and the Center for Disease Control. And he used those statistics to show that Pike County cancer mortality, it went, believe it or not, from 12% below the national average in the 50s and 60s to the latest is in 2019 and 20, it's now 33% above average. And that made Pike County the highest of all Ohio counties in cancer mortality. And the premature, not only that, but the premature death rate in Pike County is almost twice the national average.
You know, I wonder too, what is the health of livestock and pets there? Because I know from other locations, just from electric generation, not from nuclear, that the death rate among like cattle, anything that's outside, pets is just unbelievable. Maybe they don't measure that because it's not important, but it's definitely important because people are eating the food that is being raised on the pastures and all these places where that food would be contaminated.
Okay, well, Pat, before you answer that, let me remind everybody that you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jan Annie Warmke, reminding you it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
Oh, I wish. Thank God.
Yeah, okay, we're being a little morbid here.
It's not feeling like it right now.
Since we're talking about nuclear and nuclear that's occurring near home, and now, as Pat just brought up, we're joined by Pat Morita, who is an activist, anti-nuclear activist here in Ohio, and pointing out that down in the, is it referred, you said it's the Portsmouth nuclear, what is the true term for this place down near Piketon?
Well, the Department of Energy calls it the Portsmouth site, and isn't it convenient that they leave out the word nuclear? So we, of course, refer to it as the Portsmouth nuclear site.
I'm surprised that they don't call it the Unicorn and Bunnies facility, you know, because it's like whenever you see a bill at the legislature, if it's like the Freedom Act, you know it's trying to restrict your freedoms. Or if it's about jobs for everybody, it's about to put you out of work. So they always use the opposite of what it is. So anyway, that's a whole different aside. So anyway, Annie raised the issue of, you're saying that the activity at that site, and of course, correlation is not causation, and that's one of those issues that you're never going to be able to prove specifically this did that, but it seems pretty likely that the activity at this site has caused an elevation of cancers and other type diseases at that location, and has that extended not just to the human population, but to the animal population, the livestock,
everything
surrounding agricultural.
And if the school is contaminated, then the pastures, the buildings that animals are raised in, the pets that go out and pee on the grass, everything is contaminated. It's a wonder they're not all lit up and lighting the night sky.
Have there been studies to this effect there, Pat, or are we just making righteous assumptions here?
Not that I know of, because the Department of Energy does not want to do any studies about any kind of health. So there are people are taking samples in private homes around there, around the Piketon site, and the Portsmouth nuclear site, I should say, and they are finding a lot of radioactivity in attics and so forth, where it's just been accumulating. But now, definitely, there have been animal mutations and deaths in places like around the Nevada test site and at Three Mile Island. I don't know of any statistics or reports on pets in that area, but I can say that the Department of Labor Workers' Compensation has paid out more than $1.1 billion in compensation for illnesses and injuries to workers at the Portsmouth nuclear plant. And that is with half of people that applied were denied benefits.
The thing that strikes me, and I want to go back to this about the animals, is that, you know, so when we try to talk about these issues and people's eyes just glaze over many issues that we're all interested in terms of social justice. But it strikes me that when you look at statistics around how animals are treated, for example, we know from studies that if you are buying meat in a store, and that is more important to that consumer how that animal was treated than if it was raised organically. Not that the two are not related, but they want to know there was humane treatment. And so what I'm getting at is, from a marketing standpoint, because I'm always trying to think, how do you get people energized? I mean, really, a lot of people, not just five people who show up at the you know, town hall, would be to know how these animals are being impacted. And then the fact that probably thousands, maybe millions of people are eating the meat from those pastures. It just strikes me as such a bizarre thing that nobody's doing anything about that, because it affects anybody who eats meat.
Yes, well, I stopped eating meat because of the cruelty to animals, and not just because of the environmental impact impacts that it had, or my own health. Really, it was mostly because of what I saw, what I could actually see these animals suffering.
Well, when I was doing a little bit of research on this, little is about all I ever do. But anyway, it looked like there were some really, really sort of obvious and egregious behaviors at this plant over the years when it was operating. Things like spraying contaminated materials onto the roads for de-icing, mixing it into the soil for plowing it under, basically.
Well,
the fields
I remember
nearby.
As a kid, they were using it as fertilizer, and they were bringing it into the fields and contaminating everything all over, not just around Waverly and Piketon, but in all the, especially up by Toledo and places like that. It was a big story at one point.
So,
well,
let
me interrupt you here.
We're not going to let you talk. You're just our expert.
Go for it.
That was radioactive waste from fracking, which is not from a nuclear activity, but anytime you go down and mine uranium, such as for a nuclear activity, or when you try to get natural gas out of Ohio's bedrock, which is full of uranium, it brings up all this natural radioactivity, plus the 600 or so chemicals that are added to allow this process, this fracking process to happen, to lubricate the detached wellhead, that kind of thing. So there's two different things. They're not putting anything from the Portsmouth nuclear site, from actual nuclear activities, onto the roadways, but they are putting it from fracking. So it's natural gas that is responsible for those things that go on the road, are sprayed. Actually, they at one time were putting coal ash waste from burning coal. So sure. Those are fossil fuel activities that have radioactivity and other chemicals sprayed on our roads.
Well, let me expand out a little bit from the Portsmouth facility, because we're talking about nuclear. It just struck me when I heard about this House bill. It's like a discord, because it feels like the nuclear industry is dead and buried. We're off into the age of renewables, and they're trying to bring this you know, beast from the past back up and give it new life. Well, what other things are happening in Ohio specifically that are on the nuclear horizon? Do we have active nuclear power plants here in Ohio? You know, what's the state of the world, you know, from that perspective?
Well, Ohio has two operating nuclear power plants. And they are Davis-Bessey, which is up on Lake Erie, just east of Toledo, and Perry, which is on Lake Erie also, east of Cleveland. And of course, the reason they're on the lake is because they use tremendous amounts of water. And they both, Perry They're trying to get a 20-year license extension beyond this 40-year engineered lifespan. Davis Bessey already has a 20-year license extension. Davis Bessey has problems because of the shield building. Now, their shield building is a concrete and rebar structure that goes over the nuclear reactor. It was never painted originally, and so the rebar was rusting, and you all know what happens when rebar rusts. It expands and it bursts out the concrete. So this concrete so-called shield building is cracking, and they said the Department of Energy was lied to, and of course they quickly believed that this cracking was not expanding. Well, and since then, of course, they got the license extension, and guess what? The cracking is expanding. So now they are trying to, I think they have received permission from the Department of Energy to not have to meet the standards for concrete over this shield building. So we're running these ancient plants far beyond their engineered lifespans, and keeping our fingers crossed that nothing's going to happen.
So is the Davis Bessey site, reactor site, is that the site that was involved when Mr. Householder decided that we needed to bail out the nuclear industry by charging every Ohioan a fee?
Yes, Davis Bessey and Perry, those two. But the money was just going to go to First Energy, which is now Energy Harbor. It was just going to go to them, and they also operate two nuclear plants, two reactors at one site in Beaver Valley, Pennsylvania, which is only 4 miles from the Ohio border. And so First Energy said at that time that they were losing money and they were going to have to close the plants if they didn't get this bailout. Well, they did get, the House Bill 6 did pass, but then First Energy had to ask them to rescind the bailout because the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission passed a new rule that said that if they were getting a subsidy, they could not compete in the bidding. So they would not have been able to sell any of their electricity. So they asked to have their bailout rescinded, but of course they did not. House Bill 6 still has the dismemberment of the renewable and efficiency standards, completely dismissed those, and they're still bailing out two coal plants.
They were outside of the state, right, in Indiana?
One of them was outside of the state.
Well, we should also point out that a number of people have been arrested. There were allegations, allegedly,
of
60 million dollars in bribes that were paid, allegedly, by First Energy to these alleged legislators. So, I think it's interesting to me that the fallout from this, of course, when it was happening, it was clear it was a pay-to-play type thing. Everybody acknowledges everything was illegal in all of this, yet for some reason, it seems to still be going on. You know, it still seems like this legislation, most of it, is still in effect, which strikes me as sad.
Oh, it's more than sad.
Yeah.
It's pitiful, really. And people voted for this. So, it's just bizarre.
Okay, well Pat, we only have a minute. We only have a minute left. So tell us something hopeful, right, in this minute that we have before we start crying.
So, well, check out the Ohio Nuclear Free Network. We're getting a new website. Some good information can be found by doing a search for the Ohio Nuclear Free Network. And lastly, I would say, don't believe the hype that hydrogen or that carbon is that nuclear is carbon free, because look at all the all the activities at the Portsmouth site and see if you think that's carbon-free.
Okay, well, thank you, Pat. Well, you've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. Today, we've been joined by Pat Morida, and we thank you very much for that, Pat. And we want to thank our always nuclear-free Emmy Award-winning producer, Adam Rich. And we want to thank you for just spending a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother hopefully told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
play nice with others, clean up your own mess, and go check out Ohio Nuclear Free Network.
All right. Till next time. Bye-bye.
Find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com. It's the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
You are. And today we're going to talk about non-consumption or thanks for nothing.
Non-consumption. Wow.
Yeah, well, thanks for nothing. And we'll talk about this in a little bit more depth, obviously. Otherwise, we're going to have 30 minutes of dead air. So
I was thinking of it more like vacation from consumption.
Vacation from consumption.
Not non-consumption.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you consume things, but the idea is not to go out and buy stuff.
Well,
and
it's a little more complicated than
all right,
that. Let's
well,
back
tell us
up.
The history.
Okay,
tell
let's
us the
back
history.
Up. So one day, as is generally the case, you and I were talking about a lot of serious things, and we were driving along. And we heard the stock market report, and one of us, which we cannot recall, which we should because this is over a decade ago.
I'm sure it was me ranting against the stock market.
Okay, well.
Because I always say, I like to say, is there any piece of information that is more useless to the average American than what is happening in the stock market? Yet every single media outlet reports on it every single day. So it's not like I'm going to run out and buy stock, you know, because, oh, hey, what do you know? The Dow Jones went up or down 2 points, you know?
Right. And I think so. I think there were these two things that collided. One was perhaps you saying that because we had heard something on the radio. And the other was me saying, you know, what would be really fun and really invigorating is if we had a happiness report every day on the radio, and they would tell us how well our children were doing and how what great fruit production we had in our neighborhoods.
If the Cleveland Browns won their football game.
Exactly. Well, maybe not.
They're
wouldn't.
Happy in Cleveland.
Yes, that's right. Well, a lot of people are happy. It's worldwide. But I'm just saying it has a lot more to do with everyday life and the value that we would place on things very differently. So we had this epiphany. And I said, well, you know what would be really great is if we decided that we'd take a month, maybe in January, and we wouldn't spend any money and we wouldn't use any energy to amount to anything.
Well, so, I think the initial thought was money.
Well, that's correct. But then we had our French intern who liked to talk to me about the idea that money is a barrier between people. And he got in touch with me when he found out we were going to do this, not spending any energy or any money. And he said, you know, we should do it with energy too, which felt like a really big pinch. Ouch. Mm-hmm. And so that made us have to really think through a lot more things, and then we decided to do that. And then we had the misfortune that you, or the good fortune that you got invited to teach at our local college and start the first week of January. And we said, oh, sweet Jesus, what are we going to do? Because we had decided we'd fill up the car, and when the gas ran out, that would be it for the month, that we'd have to be really careful with how we used it. And
and I liked the idea of January because it felt like kind of the anti-Christmas. You know, Christmas season has, regardless of the religious implications, has become just this orgy of consuming.
Yeah.
You know, everything, all the way starting from Halloween, you know, go buy this, go buy that, go buy this. And the reports on the news is Christmas shopping is up, and Black Friday, everybody's killing each other to buy toasters or big screen televisions. And all of that feels so out of control and so wrong that the anti-Christmas saying, okay, we're going to celebrate the month of January by consuming nothing.
Well, for me, it was more like, hey, winter's going to be here. We're going to snuggle down. We're just going to be together. And so we can be more like the bears and the groundhogs and have some rest. And that's mm-hmm. I didn't know that's exactly what would happen, but I had hoped for that. And we did have a couple of kinks in the chain, as they say. And one was that we had a child who was going to college, and we called her Miss America because she announced she wasn't going to participate and she was going to use electricity in her bedroom and she didn't care.
Well, we called her Miss America because she was one third of the population, but consumed about three quarters of the
everything. And but the other thing that was great was So what happened, just to give a sort of sneak preview, so a spoiler here, is that we did find that we had a renewed thankfulness for abundance and a simpler way of living. And we enjoyed ourselves. We had a vacation from consumption. And Miss America actually came closer to us in terms of she decided that she got up the first morning after we had started practicing Thanks for Nothing. And she said, I got up in the night to pee and I used my headlamp. I didn't turn the light on, Mama. And so we started to think that was going to be good. She did try to draw the line when we had candles for dinner because she said, I want to see my food. But she finally gave in. But so let's just talk about, well, let me just say that one of the things that happened was that we loved those 30 days or so that we had this vacation. And there was a lot of things that we had to do that were challenging. Like, for instance, I'd made a promise to go to a birthday party for someone that's dear to me, but I couldn't drive the car. So I had to ask someone to take me. And that really pinched me hard. But it turned out that I got to know somebody I hadn't known well. And it was a lovely experience.
I think for me, the non-consumption, the non-buying anything wasn't a problem at all. It really, where it was pushing was the use of electricity, basically saying we're not
Hot
going
water.
To use electricity. Now, we cheated a little bit because we left the refrigerators running.
Right.
Because we didn't want everything to spoil. But we did turn off the hot water heater. We didn't use any lights.
We did have hot water. So here's the thing that I was going to say is we had to sit down and we had to make a plan. And everybody should be doing that, whether you're going to go without electricity and not spend anything. And we've always been good at having a plan, but this was a different kind of plan. So we decided we got to have a month-long menu, which actually we still do today. We started that there, and we had to think about where we're going to get this hot water. So we knew we had hot water on the wood stove. We had a big kettle, a big enamel kettle, and then we had small kettles. That was fine, but then how are you going to take a shower?
Yeah.
And so we realized, wait a minute, we've got one of those solar shower bags. And so we decided that would work for the shower. And then like the second night, you went to fill the hot water into the shower bag and then something happened and it spilled all over the floor and you couldn't take your shower. Right. And you were so upset about it.
I mean, other than, you know, 15 minutes of crying and it was all over.
No, it was a lot of whining and several cuss words I haven't heard out of your mouth for a
while.
Those
were, I would say those were the two things, at least for me personally, because getting up in the morning and then having to wait like half an hour for the water
for
to heat up
water for coffee.
That was annoying. And of course, heating up pots of hot water for the shower, you know, once you get into the rhythm of it. It was
hot water for tea or coffee in the morning. Yeah. We spent every year trying to figure a different solution.
I didn't realize I could just stand there and stare at a kettle for like 40 minutes going,
Is it hot yet?
I can't move.
But you know, so that's the reason we came up with the idea of calling it Thanks for Nothing, is because to be thankful for what you have. Be thankful, you know, like when you're mad at somebody and say, well, thanks for nothing. It means that you got nothing from that experience or that person. And so anyway, so what ended up happening was...
Well, you're just to say, we were giving thanks for non-consumption.
Yes, that's right.
So it was taking that phrase and just turning it on its head, saying, hey, this is great. And I always like to think of it as like the secular Lent or the secular Ramadan, where you say every major religion has a 30-day period or in that neighborhood where you do voluntary restriction or voluntary, I don't know the word is escape, but anyway, you're going to deny yourself something. Like with Ramadan,
yeah, you're going to give up something, they say.
From dawn to dusk. Mm-hmm. You know, with Lent, of course, we would always give up stuff that we weren't using anyway.
Like licorice.
I will not drive a moped. Well, I don't own a moped, so, you know, what the heck. So,
that might be why you're not a Catholic anymore.
Hey, it was technically right.
Well, you know? That's true. But so what ended up happening over the course of a decade was that first year we did the 30 days and we really enjoyed ourselves. We felt we had a true vacation. So the next year we went into Thanks for Nothing month in January the 1st, cleaned the freezer and the refrigerator. That had become our tradition. And off we went. And we loved it so much, we said, let's go for 2 months. And then the third year we said, let's just start the beginning of December. Now for most people, that would be a disaster because there's a lot of holiday season going on there. But that we didn't skip having a holiday season. We just were prepared. And so we went almost 4 months and we've
right,
done
we got
that
all the way through February, well, then into March.
Yeah, and in those days we had a big class that came in March and I didn't want to have to make a big dessert. So I bought fresh fruit at the store and that was my big cheating for when the class came. So that took us to the third week of March. So really four months of not consuming, not buying anything. If we needed something, we had to make do or we had to ask somebody to trade or give it to us. So the first year, the first day, you broke your boot string.
Right. I was tying my shoelaces and it broke. And I'm thinking, okay, 30 days and I now don't have a shoelace.
Yeah, for those shoes, and it's winter, and so that's the only pair that you had because you're so hard on shoes and mm-hmm. things. And so anyway, so you said, what am I going to do? And I said, well, you're going to have to go on Facebook and ask for a shoestring. So you did, and somebody you knew sent you.
A GoFundMe to buy a shoelace.
Yes, that's right. Somebody sent you in a couple of days a shoestring, and the next day you broke the other one.
Yeah.
And you had to ask for the other one. But the thing that, one of the things that happened that was really invigorating was that all of the work we've done, all of the life we've created for ourselves is rooted in reuse and repurpose. But for those 4 months, we had to, we really couldn't not back off from that. So whatever we needed, we had to figure out what else worked. And it was really fun. It was being creative, sometimes aggravating. It meant a lot of working together on things. It meant resting more. The first solar installer book that we did, I edited in the dark with a headlamp at night because you would be gone teaching. And I would sit there in the evening, you know, editing the book with my headlamp. So some of the things that we had to do, because one of the first questions people always ask us when we talk about what we call now thanks for nothing season, is that how do you pay your bills?
Well, we just don't, and no problem.
No, the bank loves us. They don't care.
Everybody assumes that we're on thanks for nothing. So just let it slide.
Okay. Oh. Well, so if that's not the case for your life, then the other thing is that almost all of our expenses are fixed expenses. And so everything can go through an automatic payment. And that's how we did it. And we weren't spending money on anything else. So it wasn't any big problem.
Okay, well, let's take a break for a fixed payment here to remind everyone that you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, reminding you it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
Thank God. So we're talking about thanks for nothing, and it's just a concept that we decided internally to place upon ourselves. And of course, we have this strange vision that maybe that this will become adopted and will become the next holiday season.
You have that.
Yeah,
you have
it
that
ain't going to happen. But anyway, I think there may be a few people out there who say, you know what, it would be nice to take a voluntary break from consumerism. You know, just set yourself up once a year, whether it's a day or a week or a month.
I don't think people can see how to do it. And this is the constant.
But they could do it for a week.
Well, okay, let me just back up and say that we have every year invited people to join us, and some people have, but they don't join us. Each person has their own unique way of doing it. So some people decided not to shave. That was their.
I did that, but I didn't realize it was a thing.
No, you know? I wasn't on the list. But most people were worried about what they were going to eat, which struck me as incredibly strange, because even when I wasn't a farm woman and, you know, didn't have a big garden, we always had plenty of food for, it might not be everything you want to eat over a period of time. So that was a good way to talk about menus. And so I wrote a book about Thanks for Nothing season, called The Journey Toward Nothing. And in it, I have the menu for the first month. And I posted that menu in a blog every day, saying what the weather was and what the blog was and what I was thinking. And we've eaten lunch together any day we are together. And so that wasn't any big deal.
Well, one thing I noticed out of all of this was, of course, in the planning for knowing that we were going to be basically doing without electricity for a month. And so we would have to deal with lighting. So we got ourselves some kerosene lamps and some flashlights and some headlamps and just prepared that way. It created a program and a plan when there are arbitrary disruptions in the electrical grid. So you go through a whole month like that. Well, then if you've got a power outage, you know, who cares?
Well, one of the things we did learn, given that analogy you're just giving, is that it is easier to be without electricity in the winter than the summer, because we had a lightning strike in our field that knocked out everything right before we were having a big workshop. And we didn't have any way to heat water. And so there was a real challenge with that.
Well, it's easier for us. I mean, we have a thermal mass house with passive solar, and we have a wood stove. And also, one of the reasons we picked the winter is because that's the slow season
for our business. We wanted to be slowed down, though, to really be in the season of being slowed down. So anyway, we also had to think about energy consumption. Mm-hmm. And you're talking a little bit about that. But so we decided that we would look up when the U.S. government said that it was dusk. And so every night by 5:30, we would have anything that if there was a computer on or whatever, because we were allowed to charge the computers. I think we charged them to our solar generator the first couple of years. And then after that, we didn't do it that way because we had a solar array.
Yeah, the electricity thing kind of went by the wayside because we had installed a solar array here that provided us with our electricity. And then we're saying, really? Okay, so we're going to do without electricity, even though it's technically or theoretically free.
Yeah, we don't really use that much. But then there was the issue of transport, and I already talked a little bit about that and the fact that if I wanted to go somewhere, I put a restriction on myself that I had to ask someone to take me. And I really wrestled with that because, wait, it's still using the same amount of energy because they have to come and get me. I live in the middle of nowhere. But it turned out it was an okay thing. I only went somewhere like once. And most of the time I didn't drive the car for 4 months. Mm-hmm. So the lighting after dark, we did have headlamps, as I said, and sometimes we would watch a video on our laptops because they were charged up.
But mostly I just kept beating you at cribbage. So.
Okay, well, and I kept getting mad, so we stopped doing that.
Then we tried backgammon.
But, that was worse.
That was even worse.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. And so the only things that we actually continued to spend money on, if needed, was livestock supplies and feed because we do have better storage now, but we didn't have enough storage to get us all the way through. Certainly the first month would have been fine, but not 4 months of hay and
the goats don't care that we're trying to make a point.
No, the dogs don't either. So they're just like, where's my food? So I think the other thing that we did a lot of thinking about and focusing on, especially even after we finished the season each year, is that our practicing those 4 months of this sort of resiliency, We didn't stop doing it. We never went back to shopping. Sometimes for our business or our consulting, we have to look up a lot of things and then we'll say, gosh, that's exhausting, but we're not really shoppers anymore. Mm-hmm. So,
one of the things you've been doing over the years is basically putting together an annual shopping list.
Oh, that's true. You know, we have that.
You say, these are the things over the course of the year that we think we're going to need. And then often you'll run across them secondhand. Somebody says, I have this. We need that, or whatever. Or we'll need that in June,
Well, we always need two befores, for something. And so I just traded two befores, some used two befores, but they're still perfect, for plants, some perennial plants that we dug up. The guy came and we dug it up together. So anyway, but then the other piece of this is this sort of the focus on the happiness factor. And we began to think about this because there are several elements to that, which are really the elements of the thanks for nothing season and a sense of security. I mean, that has to be at the heart of everything, is that we feel safe and we feel provided for. And that definitely is the case in our lives.
Well, I think the idea or the process of planning for this extended period of time, you've used the word resiliency. I think it gives you that sense that, there are always going to be unforeseen situations.
Like a pandemic.
Like a pandemic, right.
And toilet paper.
Yeah. And so we're like, when we go into a 3-month lockdown or a 4-month or now 8-month or whatever, it doesn't feel that out of the ordinary.
No, we kept saying, it's just a scarier. It's like something invading our thanks for nothing season, because when the pandemic came, we were just coming out of thanks for nothing season. And I had decided I would go to the store to buy something for my goat. I had a goat that was paralyzed. And when I went to the store and these people were acting so insane, and it was culture shock. It was always culture shock to not go to a store for 4 months and then see the changes, like packaging was the same but smaller amounts in the packages and crazy things like that. But anyway, so I said to myself, I've got another week of thanks for nothing, but you know what? There's some stuff I want. Not that I needed, but want, and I'm going to buy it right now.
Well, and it turned out to be kind of unfortunate timing, because our thanks for nothing month or season ends like March 15th, and the lockdown started right around March 16th.
Yes, that's right.
so we kind of went from a 3-month or 4-month hiatus to another.
No, we went a very long time before you went to the grocery store at 6 o'clock in the morning for things.
But the biggest thing, I think, with the thanks for nothing versus the COVID lockdown is
really, when it gets to your happiness factor, the lack of friends visiting, the lack of community, the lack of social interaction, because you can do all of those things without consuming things. And I think we're all beginning to see that maybe that's, you know, we all know the Hallmark card kind of friends or, you know, your health and all of these intangibles. But as a society, we don't behave that way. It's sort of slapping us upside the head that the thing you miss most is being able to go and hug a friend or
yeah, no hugs, only
time.
From you. Yeah. But you know, well, that's good enough a lot of the time. But the other thing
what about the rest of the world?
I know they don't get any hugs from you. But here's the other piece of this is that even in the happiness factor, we have a good life. But there is great energy that comes from interaction with people. And that does not come from a screen that you talk to people on. It doesn't come from a piece of paper, an old-fashioned letter, or a telephone call. It comes from working together and doing things together. And that's probably been the hardest thing. But that's still there. I mean, people are still our friends. People are still trying to connect. In fact, we're going to have a bonfire for Christmas Day and have the cauldron with soup in it and social distance. And because we're not big on, you know, what Christmas represents, but we're big on getting together with people. So, but no Yule party, no birthday swap this year. That was sad. But anyway, so we have a lot of things in that we're evaluating around high expectations of having enough. That's a big one. Meaningful work. Very important, and that sustains us.
Well, I want to back up because when you talk about having enough, I think that's something we've noticed from this lifestyle here, where when people come to visit, we've remarked on it several times that there seems to be, again, culturally, this hole in this disconnect from our world that we try and fill up by buying stuff.
Yeah, buy things.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the people who come here, we always sort of note that they understand there's something missing, some lack of connection.
In their own life.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And they're kind of seeking that. They know inherently that there's something missing. They just don't quite know what that is. And so you fill it up with consumption.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Our society tells you that all the time.
Yeah,
blasted
with
commercials.
All kinds of stuff. You know. But I know for myself that I'm like that I am that person. And so what I like to do when I'm working on a project is I want to have a list. I want to identify what I need. I want to know a year ahead on like my annual shopping list so that I can rein myself in, because I think it is a cultural norm to buy a lot of things. And I do know in order to be a creative person, sometimes you've got to have a lot more things than maybe you think you need. But I also know it makes me feel safe to know there's plenty of food in the larder, that the dog bin is full of dog food, that the barn is full of hay. I feel, and the wood is chopped and ready to go. I feel rich.
Okay. Well, up until the wood thing, I feel claustrophobic with the clutter. I mean, that's something.
That's been a big challenge during the pandemic, is every surface is a table in our house right now because we don't have anybody coming and going. We're like picking up and tidying up because we have this parade of visitors all the time. So, but that's different mm-hmm. than we're talking about.
I was just going to point out the consumption part, the lack of buying stuff for me was a complete non-issue. You know, I'm happy not to buy stuff.
Yeah, because you think punishment is to go to Gabriel Brothers to buy something. I mean, it's the whining that comes out of that store when you get in the car. I beg you not to take me with you.
Uh-huh.
So other things in the happiness factor are health. Well, if you think about it, it's the winter and you're going to take this time for yourself and you're going to reflect on things and maybe write about what you're doing and make more time for your friends and your family, go to bed earlier.
And that gets into the circadian rhythms
of the seasons
of life, where you mm-hmm. say, okay, in the summer you're busy, in the spring you're busy, but in the fall you should start to slow down a little bit. You need to, in the winter time, you know, hibernate a little bit because it's dark, and people resist that in our modern society, and I think it drags you down over time.
Yeah. Well, one thing I know is that some people really do like to think about these things, and we definitely would love to hear from folks who listen to the podcast
But not during the winter because we're resting. You know.
That'll be the day that'll definitely be the day. But we would like to hear how other people are being resilient, how they're living their lives in a more simplistic or calm way, because we don't have a conversation about these things, and I think we really must share ideas and share how it works
all
with
right,
each
and
other.
Let us know if we're going to start a movement of thanks for nothing.
Oh,
you know.
Jeez.
Join on in, even for a week.
Or a day. If there's something you're going to do for a day, that's really great. Anybody can do anything for a day.
Well, yeah, maybe. All right. Well, you've been listening. I was thinking of a lot of things I can't do for a day. But
well, being pinched continuously, right? That'd be tough.
Okay, that wasn't one of them. All right. You've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. We want to thank our always consumptive producer, Adam Rich.
Poor guy.
Sounds like he has consumption. And we want to thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother hopefully told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is?
Well, I don't know. I got to think about it. Play nice with others. Clean up your own mess. And my grandma always used to say, don't be so darn ornery, Jay.
All right. Till next time. Bye-bye.
I know the stars are dancing in the firelight. Soon we'll be together. All will be revealed. Mother Earth will sing, and her children will be healed.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.
Listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM and streaming on the web, kboo.fm. I'm Don Jacobson, and moving on, we'll be here in just a few minutes right after the news.